This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
744, 16 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWO. Quickly to Stephanie Regal, business writer for the Times-Picayune, NOLA.com. Very talented journalist, and I'm a big fan of hers. Good morning, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm okay. Let's talk about the Archdiocese and a bankruptcy case. Maybe you can give me a little bit of context on this with the five-year anniversary of the bankruptcy approaching and how we got from there to here.
Right. So on May 1st, it'll be 5 years since Archbishop Amon placed the Archdiocese in bankruptcy as a way to deal with the growing number of what were then only about 36 or so lawsuits against mostly priests and some deacons and others for past child rape and molestation. You know, it was never a move to deal with an insolvent church. At the time, he even told the Vatican very clearly that the church was very solvent, but more as a way to deal with the potential for mass tort litigation and come up with a reorganization plan so that everybody could get something so that they didn't have to deal with a race to the courthouse and also perhaps some of the ugly things that would have come out in tort trials. But anyway, it's been, as the judge said famously a couple of years ago, a knife fight since day one, and we're now approaching the fifth anniversary, and this week here in New Orleans, we're in the middle of 3 days of sort of high-stakes mediation to try to work out a settlement. It's not at all the first time that the sides are talking, but it is the first in-person talks here in New Orleans at the law offices of Jones Walker, which represents the church. So they're trying to close a gap. Late last summer, I guess, the church filed a reorganization plan, an early draft, offering about $62 million, which is kind of lowball, but it should be said that that plan envisioned turning over the rights to the trustee, which is a technical thing, basically, but to allow the plaintiffs in the case, the abuse survivors, to go ahead and sue the insurers for additional compensation. So $62 million theoretically would not be the extent of it, but they would hopefully be able to collect from insurance companies additional monies. That's far, far short of what the Survivors Committee filed, their own plan seeking nearly $1 billion. However, their plan did include about $777 million from the insurance companies. The insurance companies have not agreed to pay anything close to that amount, and one of them, Sparta Insurance, is insolvent. So we don't know if we'll even get anything out of Sparta. So if you take the insurance money out of the survivors' plan, there's a $150 million gap they've been working to close. And there have been comments in court to suggest that they have made some progress trying to close that gap. But because the mediation is privileged, we don't know how far apart they are at this point. But that's one of the things they're trying to work out this week. And then next week, the insurers will be invited to the table, and they'll try to work out some of the more specifics with them in terms of how they go about collecting. But, you know, this might happen. It really might not. Mm-hmm. And it's just 5 years in, as we said, on May 1st, a very painful anniversary for the survivors, many of whom are older. A lot of this abuse happened decades ago, and some of them are dead. And it's just very, very frustrating for them and their attorneys. And it's been a huge problem and a black eye for our archdiocese, as it has four archdioceses around the country. But this one has just been among the longest and more costly cases, and so it's been a hard one.
Knife fight, right?
Knife fight, yes.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, Stephanie. As you said that, something just clicked in my mind. You said when he declared bankruptcy in 2000, there were how many claimants or how many abuse survivors?
Well, there had been, I can't remember exactly, but there had been about 36 lawsuits filed in state court at that time.
And since then, that number
it came after Archbishop Ayman had published a credibly accused list mm-hmm. of clergy. And at the time, the list wasn't even complete, and it has grown as they have added more names to it. But in the wake of that, you started to see these lawsuits, and I think the assumption was that more were coming. Froze that, and now we've had hundreds of claimants file claims, basically, with the court, saying I, too, was, abused.
So let me tell you what I heard. What I heard was that the Archbishop filed bankruptcy. At that time, he told the Vatican, the church, the archdiocese was not insolvent. And here's what clicked mm-hmm. in my head, Stephanie, is he knew the extent of what was being covered up, what was being hidden, and he knew that there were going to be a lot more claimants. So he figured to get ahead of it, now's the time to file bankruptcy. Would that be a false presumption on my part, or do we have any facts to back that up at all?
No, I don't think so. But the interesting thing, just as a legal argument, the churches across the country, he didn't come up with this plan, right? He was taking a page from a playbook that other dioceses around the country adopted almost two decades ago, going back to the early 2000s, when the extent of this clergy abuse crisis became public. And so, the idea is to approach these kind of cases where you're going to have many, many claims, whether it's dozens or hundreds, as a mass tort, like the asbestos litigation or the Purdue Pharma opioid abuse litigation. And you basically put the institution in bankruptcy, and then you come up with a way to divide up however much money everybody agrees to so that everybody gets something, and that you don't have the first three guys who filed lawsuits have hellacious, and very sensational trials with huge jury awards, and then the church really does have nothing left. There are people that say, yeah, but that's not what bankruptcy court should be for, and there are other people who say, And people apart from the church, I'm not at all trying to be an apologist for the Catholic Church, right, but it's a legitimate and very interesting legal debate that like, if you Googled it around, I could read about it all day. It's very, very interesting. I don't know.
Let me take a break, Stephanie.
The best way to do it.
And we'll pick it up when we come back. And I think one difference that we can address when we come back is if Gregory Ayman was acting as the CEO of a subsidiary of a company, a la Entergy New Orleans, as opposed to the parent company to shield the assets, that's one thing. But when you're talking about the archbishop of a church who had their hands in a cover-up, a nasty, ugly cover-up, and exposing victims to predators without any knowledge or warning anybody, then you have to look at it, is that really the morally responsible thing to do? And is you, when you say the church, we got to distinguish that from the archdiocese, because Lord knows the Roman Catholic Church has assets. If you want to break it down to a sub-entity like the archdiocese, that's different. We'll talk more. We come back 7:52, 8 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 7:56, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Stephanie Regal, business writer for the Times-Picayune, NOLA.com, proud alum of Academy of the Sacred Heart, and also LSU, right?
And UNO.
Did some time at UNO. I was going to say that.
From UNO.
I was going to throw that in. You let me get to it. Absolutely.
Love them. Love them.
Me too. Do you teach at LSU, Stephanie, or not?
No, don't you think I should?
I
always wanted to pick up a class there.
I honestly think you should.
Never happened. Thank you. Maybe one day.
I am a big fan of yours. That sincerely. Let's talk about So what I mentioned before, if the archbishop, I don't know if you want to get involved here or not, because you're a reporter.
Right?
I don't want to go into opinion, but let me phrase the question this way. What the archbishop is doing for a Fortune 500 company would be what he should be doing to act in the best interest of the stockholders and the assets of the corporation. Would that be accurate or not?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, the issue is really, do you want to, and you know, reasonable minds may differ on this, but if you want to keep this archdiocese as a going concern so that it continue to, so it can continue to do its mission, then you can't liquidate everything. If you believe that the wrongs that they admit they perpetrated and covered up are so grievous that all, you know, everything's on the table, then you liquidate everything and you give the survivors what they deserve, but then you don't have a church anymore. And I think that's probably the difference, you know, and I think there are those who believe that it should be shut down because you really probably, or, you know, I mean, that's one of the issues.
And to be clear, again, much like companies have different affiliates or different sub-entities to protect the assets of the major corporation, it is not the Catholic Church that is alleging bankruptcy or saying that they have no assets. It is the Archdiocese of New Orleans.
Correct.
And what happens from here? The lawyers continue to make out. I have a friend that's in estate law, and he says sometimes, and I'm not trying to make it about this at all because the victims have a rightful claim, but he says, you know, y'all fight it out, and whatever's left you can have after you pay me. In a way, are the lawyers the big winners here so far?
The lawyers have made a fortune over this, and the lawyers on both sides, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's $44 million and counting. Every month, the monthly statements come out, and the numbers just keep going up and up and up.
So where do you think we are?
Where is that?
A week, 2 weeks from now, a month from now?
I could not say. I could see this thing, you know, come, because just remember this. Even if they do reach a settlement, there are still a lot of hurdles that we can talk about on a future show have to be overcome. And it may not get confirmed. It may not be approved.
Stephanie,
it may
not happen. Let's plan on that. We're running out of time. And I also want to have you back to talk about what happens if the case were to be dismissed. And Meredith Grable, the judge, has suggested that. So Stephanie Riegel will come back and talk more about it on another day.